Welcome to the AWS podcast, hosted by Simon Alicia and Miles Ward. This is your regular update of new services, deep dives, and technical tips. If you'd like to share your feedback, please use the email or Twitter links at aws.amazon.com/podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the AWS podcast. Absolutely fantastic to have you back here for episode number 82. Simon Alicia here in Melbourne, Australia, Principal Solution Architect here at Amazon Web Services, joined by my illustrious co-host, the big bear of a solution architect over there in the US of A, Mr. Miles Ward. G'day, Miles. How are you going?
Simon, how are you doing today? I am feeling very bearish and bullish at the same time. looking forward to today's episode.
Yeah, there's lots to talk about, so we're going to crank right into it. And we are going to start with our favorite topic, probably just after architecture, maybe. It's a toss-up. But we love to talk about price reductions for customers, and we have number 42.
Oh, it's such a doozy.
It is no joke, is it? It's on the 1st of April 2014 it becomes effective, but it is no joke. Is that correct, Miles?
You would be a fool to not take advantage of these reduced prices.
I pity the fool who doesn't get the benefit of these. There you go. So there are a lot to talk about. So what we might do is divvy it up between ourselves. So I'm going to start and talk about what's happening on the EC2 side of the house, which is often where a significant amount of spend happens for IT on the compute side. So if we look at some of the reductions, now these reductions are happening across all the different regions, although they're different in different regions because we, of course, try and pass on the maximum saving we can based on efficiencies in each region. So some of the figures we'll be quoting are the US East region figures, but they are complementary to the other regions, and you can, of course, check the website to get the latest pricing. On the EC2 side, if you use the M1, M2, or C1 instance types with Linux, you'll be getting a 10 to 40% price reduction. If you're using Windows, you'll be getting a 7 to 35% price reduction on those instance types. For the C3 family, you'll be getting 30% off on Linux and a 19% reduction on the Windows side. And for the M3 family, my personal favorite at the moment, using a lot of that, 38% reduction on the Linux side and a 24 to 27% reduction on the Windows side, which is sensational. We're also reducing the prices for reserved instances as well for all new purchases. So you can save up to 45% on a one-year RI and 60% on a three-year RI relative to the on-demand price as well. So a lot of opportunity there to economize and make your spending more efficient. But give us some storage goodness, Mr. Ward.
Yeah, I mean, as exciting as the drops in compute are, I think storage is the place where we've really done something incredible by taking the full 11 nines of designed durability for S3 and lowering the first level price, the first terabyte of data that you store to us, to down to 3 cents, not 9 or 7 or 8 and a half, but 3 cents a gigabyte. That's 65% off of the price just yesterday. So pretty exciting downward shift. That puts the 5 petabyte plus price down to 2 3/4 of a cent a gigabyte, which means we basically, in a lot of ways, have flattened the pricing discount tiers. You know, everybody gets it as, you know, almost as cheap as the very biggest users used to get it. So that's an incredible benefit. There's also some improvements for services that consume EC2 resources. So RDS has had price reductions of an average of 28% down. ElastiCache nodes are down by an average of 34%. And I think super interesting is the Elastic MapReduce prices are down across the board. The instances that I'm most fired up about, I don't know about you, Simon, but having built some pretty significant Hadoop infrastructures before, being able to focus on big disk with the HS1 8X large instances at 61% off means that in an Elastic MapReduce environment, whether you're running Hive or Pig, you can meet the same $1,000 a terabyte a year that those Redshift guys have been poking everybody in the eye with for the last couple moons. So that stuff means that you can get to pretty incredible setups.
Absolutely, and really the sort of sum total of all these reductions is firstly a huge amount of really positive feedback from customers who are super excited to get these price reductions applied to their accounts automatically from the 1st of April, which is always a nice present to get at the start of the month. But also, the big message is if you've recently done any economic modeling, any TCO modeling, any type of financial analysis on running your workloads on AWS, it would behoove you to redo them because the price differential is significant enough that it will make a material change to any of your calculations for the good. So, to my way of thinking, because I did some pricing recently for an organization, and the pricing was, I think, compelling is how you would put it before the price reduction. I think the slang word would now be slam dunk after the price reduction. So it's certainly something to look at really, really closely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The customers that I've spoken with have been some variable between starry-eyed and slack-jawed. So,
in a good way. In a good way. That's fantastic. We love price reductions. Certainly not the first, as I've said, the 42nd one so far will not be the last. We're always working really hard for our customers to optimize the cost of these services. Now, speaking of customers, one of the things that a lot of my customers, particularly enterprise customers, have been asking for me a lot of the time has been a capability with our virtual private cloud, which, to remind you, is a logically isolated section of the cloud that you create, the AWS cloud that you create using a virtual network. Something they've wanted for a while is something called VPC peering. So, Miles, tell us a little bit about VPC peering and why it is so useful.
Sure. So, because of that logical isolation, virtual private cloud has enabled all sorts of businesses to build a distinct unit, like say, for example, for a department or maybe even a project, you'll have a separate VPC. But creating routes, networks between them typically has meant that you have to bounce off of some place in the public internet. And from a security standpoint, most of my buddies in network land, they don't like that one bit. So what VPC peering allows you to do is to construct a linkage between two VPCs, even two VPCs from different customers. So that means that you can say, okay, you know, Mr. Systems Integrator that's working with me to build a great system, I want access to be able to write data into your change management database, but I don't want to go across the public internet. I want to move directly from my secure VPC network infrastructure into yours. Or I want to permit your monitoring tools to read into my systems across that same secured channel. So VPC peering allows multiple different VPCs to interconnect, allowing that kind of access.
Exactly. It really makes for a flexible design topology. You can implement shared services really easily. You can have good separation of systems and departmental separation. It's really a very handy thing. Now, some of the things or the nuances to be aware of or the details to be aware of is, firstly, you can connect VPCs that are in the same AWS region. This can be regardless of which account owns them, as long as both parties agree, and the request response process is really well thought out and really well done. We do plan to extend this to support cross-region peering in the future, so be aware of that. So at the moment, in the same region is where you can do the peering. And basically, you send an invitation from one VPC to another, and the invitation has to be accepted to be able to establish that connection. And also, they expire if you do not accept it in a period of time, etc. Another thing to bear in mind, the VPC that you are peering cannot have overlapping CIDR blocks. So we want to make sure that the private address ranges are unique so you can have direct access between those particular VPCs without any network address translation required. When you do peering, there is no generation of transitive trust. So just because one is peered with the other doesn't mean it can get to a third, which is kind of a good thing from a security perspective. We like to have a lot of control there. Also, that this is implemented within the VPC fabric. So there is no single point of failure or bandwidth bottleneck to worry about. The other thing that probably people would be like to know, again, is the pricing for this, Miles.
Yeah, so there's no charge to set this system up. We've orchestrated the handshake that happens between two accounts. That all happens through our user interface, and there's no charge to establish the connection. But there is a penny a gig data transfer cost for send and receive, regardless of the availability zones involved, for data transiting the peering connection. That should simplify the calculus for folks. We had a lot of customers that were concerned about matching up availability zones and making sure that it's just a penny a gig. Makes it easy.
Exactly. It's nice and straightforward. Or maybe a penny a gig for you. For me, it's 1 cent a gig. That's just kind of how I roll.
Oh, I see how it is.
One of your US cents. So VPC peering, super exciting, available everywhere for everyone. Get into it, have a use of it. I know a lot of people will be doing a little dance of joy for that one being available. Now, I don't know what your preference is Linux distribution-wise, Mr. Ward. We haven't had that talk, have we, I don't think, at this stage. But I suspect there might be one that you like a little bit.
Well, it's interesting, this is sort of like, asking what color underwear the nerd wears, right? I mean, it's a little personal, and but I have to say that I'm a convert. I used to run, a whole bunch of different systems because we were learning this stuff, but Amazon Linux is a pretty incredible flavor. I've talked to a lot of customers that have earned a lot of value because of the existing feature benefits of the Amazon Linux distribution, not only from a performance and sort of, minimal OS kind of environment, but also above that at the, great patch consistency and very, very advanced security design of the Amazon Linux feature set.
Yeah, it is a great distro because it's kind of built for purpose, if I can put it that way. And the thing that I like is that the team really focuses on updates, new features, security patches, etc., to try and make it as relevant and as useful as possible for our customers. So with that, the Linux AMI 2014.03 is now available. That's the latest version, available both in ParaVirtual and hardware virtualization mode, both for EBS-backed and instance store-backed AMIs as well. And it is supported on all EC2 types. You can upgrade your existing EC2 instances by using Yum Update as well. It will require reboot, but you can get all the new goodness. And we're going to run through a little bit of the goodness. I'll take a couple and then let Miles round it out. So the first thing is, probably the biggest thing, is that the Linux kernel has been changed. It is now 3.10.34. Which is a nice long-term stable release, which has a bunch of performance and functionality improvements that many customers will benefit from. Another new capability is CloudInit is revved to 0.7.2, which has a really nifty capability which lets you automatically resize your root file system on boot, avoiding a whole lot of yak shaving that some people have to go through in their particular situation. So very excited for that. And a whole bunch of updates to some really handy packages, including one I think we may spend a little time on. Hit us with them, Miles. What do we got?
Sure. So, I have to say I'll take one quick pause there. I think my favorite feature in the new 3.10 is Bcache, a block layer cache for SSD caching. There are a bunch of newer applications that are taking really, really great use of that technology tool. Another really important library or package now that's available is Docker. So you can run Docker containers on top of Amazon Linux. And of course, Docker consumes and takes advantage of the LXC containment features. So both of those are available and built in. There's also a bunch of language-based improvements, right? Java 7, Ruby 2, Golang 1.2, each of those library and language improvements make it so that the Amazon Linux AMI, I think, creates a pretty incredible development environment. What do you think?
Yeah, it's amazing. Out of the box from the get-go, what you can have happening on your instance and just get on with the other stuff that you need to do is fantastic. And certainly I'm a heavy user of the yum command when I get my instance going and bring in the packages that I want and away we go without having to worry about all the cruft that can build up in an operating system over time. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to wrap up, but we are going to have a little black belt tip this week because we like a black belt tip when we can get one. And my good colleague Rodos from Down Under, Rodney Haywood, has provided this week's black belt tip. He's an avid podcast listener, was a listener before he was an employee, which is always nice. Tends to listen to the podcast in the gym, which I still find a little unsettling, not quite sure why, but I do. And his tip was around the various limits for your account that you may have for identity and access management, IAM. The good news is you can get an indication of the summary of usage of your account, both in terms of the limits or quotas you have and the usage within those quotas very simply. If you use the AWS CLI, which you should because it's pretty cool, you simply say AWS space IAM space get dash account dash summary, and that will give you a beautiful summary map of all of your quotas and all the actual utilization that you're using at any given time, giving you a nice, simple, easy, real-time snapshot of where you are so you do not run into any limits unexpectedly, which is never what we want. We always want people to be ahead of the curve. So a little black belt tip there for this week.
I like it. I have had so many opportunities to use that tool, and it is definitely a can make the difference between, having a good afternoon and having maybe not such a great afternoon.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. That's a very important difference. So we've kind of hit time here. Lots of good stuff this week. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. If you do enjoy the podcast, we really do encourage you to share it with others. Let people know it's out there. We've been seeing some great listenership and really do appreciate the feedback that we get both via email and on Twitter. If you do have feedback or suggestions, awspodcast@amazon.com is the place to go, and we really do love to hear from you. But with that, we'll wrap up. I wish you goodbye, and Miles Ward, great to talk to you again.
As always, Simon, and thank you, listeners, for taking the time with us. Rock on.
Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. We loved getting your feedback, so please contact us on Twitter @AWSPodcast or via email awspodcast@amazon.com. Theme music provided under Creative Commons by Miles Rogers, audiofarm.org/audiophiles/22275.